I'm Veronica Dudo tonight on EWTN News Nightly.
Don't ask me losing charge because I'll give you an answer and it'll be very controversial.
What does that mean?
You swear in charge.
Regime change in Venezuela as Operation Absolute Resolve rips former President Nicolas Maduro out of Caracas and throws him before a U.S. judge. The move sending ripples across the globe.
I pray for all this, and I invite you to pray too.
In Venezuela, protesters take to the streets demanding Maduro's return, but elsewhere, they celebrate his capture.
I'm happy, I'm afraid, but I'm very, very happy.
And now, as the world looks on, one question remains. What happens next? Our extensive team coverage begins now.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the feast of St. John Neumann. Our top story tonight. President Donald Trump says the case against deposed Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro is, in his words, infallible. Today in New York, Maduro was taken to a courthouse for his first appearance on drug trafficking charges. After U.S. forces captured Maduro in a weekend raid, White House correspondent Owen Jensen begins our team coverage.
Veronica, Maduro, along with his wife, son, and three others, is accused of working with drug cartels to facilitate the shipment of thousands of tons of cocaine into the U.S. They could face life in prison if convicted.
Security as tight as it's ever been outside the Manhattan federal courthouse where Nicolas Maduro was arraigned. Inside, Maduro pleads not guilty to federal drug trafficking charges, telling the judge, "I'm innocent. I am not guilty. I'm a decent man, the president of my country." On Air Force One Sunday, flying back to Washington, President Donald Trump tells reporters he wants to fix Venezuela and its oil, bring the country back, and then have elections. He also warned of a second strike if Venezuela does not behave.
Don't ask me who's in charge because I'll give you an answer and it'll be very controversial.
What does that mean?
It means we're in charge.
The U.S. raid condemned by Russia and China, and some protesters in the U.S. expressing their criticism of it as well. This, as President Trump plans to take control of Venezuela's oil industry and ask American companies to revitalize it.
People are so happy with what we've done. You know, you go down to Miami, you go down to a lot of places, and they're all dancing in the streets.
Secretary of State Marco Rubio says the U.S. gave Maduro multiple opportunities to find his way somewhere else, but he refused.
Look, the president doesn't go out looking for people to pick fights with. He's not, generally wants to get along with everybody. We'll talk and meet with anybody, but don't play games.
The United Nations Security Council held an emergency meeting today where they read a statement from the UN Secretary General.
I am deeply concerned about the possible intensification, the instability in the country, the potential impact on the region, and the precedent it may set for how relations between and among states are conducted.
President Trump also told reporters Venezuela's neighbor, Colombia, has cocaine mills and cocaine factories.
Colombia is very sick, too, run by a sick man who likes making cocaine and selling it to the United States, and he's not going to be doing it very long.
The U.S. operation in Venezuela to seize Maduro, as well as President Trump's repeated threats to annex Greenland, heightened concerns in Denmark, which has jurisdiction over the island.
We need Greenland from a national security situation. It's so strategic. Right now, Greenland is covered with Russian and Chinese ships all over the place.
As for Cuba, President Trump said that country has always survived because of Venezuela, but now it won't be receiving any more money. He added, Cuban bodyguards trying to protect Maduro were killed in the U.S. raid this past weekend. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
While the world awoke to the news of the strikes, Venezuelans were awoken by the bombings themselves hitting military buildings and damaging houses. Our reporter on the ground from our Spanish-speaking news agency, Andres Enriquez, reports from Caracas.
A night no one will ever forget, especially the Berti family and their neighbors, who received the impact of a stray projectile in the backyard of their homes. Near the neighborhood is an area known as El Volcán, where antennas, which were one of the targets of the bombings, are located. Patricia Salazar is the daughter of Mrs. Elena Berti, who is 78 years old. She was sleeping in her room just 60 feet from the bomb's impact point. That night, they said goodbye after planning Elena's birthday, which is celebrated this January 5th. The room was severely damaged. The windows shattered into 1,000 pieces, and even her bed broke. Absolutely nothing happened to Elena.
She always sleeps with a rosary behind her pillow and always has a number of saints on her nightstand. Some, unfortunately, have lost their heads. I say that she is the work of a miracle, just like my aunt and uncle who live upstairs.
Mr. Arturo Berti is Elena's brother and Patricia's uncle. He lives directly above his sister, and his house was also badly damaged. He was awake at the moment of impact.
Al ratico oigo un silbido.
After a while, I hear a long whistle, and at the end, an impact. A phenomenal explosion, something impressive. Everything moved. The bed moved. I felt the building move. All the windows shattered. The bed all covered in glass. I start with all the people I've talked to, or who have heard the story. They've told me the same thing. It's impossible. You were so lucky. How did you survive that?
Bueno, fíjate, te comienzo por toda la gente que yo he hablado.
Of course, I believe very much in God. I have always believed in God, in the Virgin, and in Jose Gregorio. That's how it is. It was the hand of God.
Sí. Sí. No, no, es así. Fue la mano de Dios.
The Berti family has started a fundraising campaign where anyone can collaborate in the reconstruction of their house. The possibility of a second wave of attacks is latent, according to President Donald Trump. Meanwhile, events in the country continue to unfold as the hours pass. In Caracas, Venezuela, Andres Enriquez, EWTN.
Even though President Trump has said the U.S. is in charge of Venezuela, the South American country still has its own government in place. In fact, acting President Delcy Rodriguez was just sworn in today. Before Saturday, she was the country's vice president. Meanwhile, her brother Jorge is the current president of the National Assembly, Venezuela's federal legislator. He, too, was reelected today and sworn in. Much of the world is still processing the impact of this historic strike on Venezuela. President of the Global Liberty Alliance, Jason Poblet, practices international and national security law. He also serves as an advisor to the International Catholic Jurist Forum. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So we've seen a lot of different reactions to the capture of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. What is your take?
I think we put it in context. I mean, it was a big start to 2026, and to better appreciate what has happened, I think we look back to the beginning of last year when President Trump and his national security team began a fundamental reorientation of U.S. foreign policy, especially in the Western Hemisphere. That helps us understand what happened in Venezuela recently. And remember, we started out with Greenland, the Panama Canal, putting our neighbors on notice that border security was going to be a priority, cracking down on transnational crime was going to be a priority, and moving assets into the region. They even created, toward the end of the year, a new command under Southcom and Northcom. So what happens here is that we're putting America first in the hemisphere, and that's just not rhetoric. That's extremely important because the hemisphere was usually treated as a sleepy, democracy-building type, maybe laboratory, and we neglected things like border security. We neglected things like transnational crime. This should not have come as a surprise to Nicolas Maduro or anyone in Venezuela, or frankly, anyone in the region. The president and his secretary of state have been very clear there would be consequences if they did not cooperate with the United States in securing borders, cracking down on transnational crime. There's been an indictment on the books for a while. I think we're going to see a lot more of this. This should be a message to China, a message to Russia, a message to Iran, and all of our partners and allies in the region, and even our adversaries, that it's a different mindset, and they should listen to what the United States is saying.
Now, this indictment came down from the first Trump administration. Of course, there was a bounty all through the Biden administration that did not change. Now, he has been captured. Of course, it was a very oppressive regime. We have seen Venezuelans in the streets. They have been celebrating. Also, family and friends in the United States. I saw one parish in Florida, Our Lady of Guadalupe. People were FaceTiming with their loved ones, still trying to figure out what's happening. So kind of what is the Catholic lens we should be looking at this event through?
I think Pope Leo had a great statement yesterday. He placed it out on his social media account, I believe on X. And first of all, prayer. I mean, I'm the child of Cuban exiles. So I grew up in South Florida. I know that parish you're talking about, Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish. And it's really a hub. And there are many hubs like that in South Florida and other parts of the country that Catholics gather and they pray and they celebrate. But also look to the future with optimism. Like what's happening in Venezuela, this is just a first step. There are a lot of factors that still have not been dealt with. Some of the people who are very close to the regime is still intact for the most part. We've taken the head out, but there's still people within that system that claim they want to work with the United States. A lot of these families are looking at this with hope that they will be able to, some of them, return to their homeland and be able to rebuild. And I think that's part of that process. And I think places like Cuba are, Cuban Americans are studying this very carefully. Nicaraguan Americans are studying this very carefully. But there's a lot of people who would love to go back and be reunited with family, reunited with friends, and try and rebuild. And as Catholics, I think we have a unique role in that. As peace builders, we have a unique role in that, in trying to understand in some of these processes that could happen, like truth and justice and reconciliation that could come after you've had governments like this in power for so long, that we have to look inward, we have to pray, we have to reflect. But we also have to be careful with the information that we are reading and consuming about what is happening or is not happening. I think we have to focus on official sources, focus on truth. And like the Holy Father says, look to the future with hope. Catholics look to the future with hope. And I think that's very important in a case like this. I frankly never thought I'd see something like this in my lifetime, because I have been monitoring events in Cuba, in Venezuela for a long time. So it's a good thing. It's a good opportunity to kind of reassess where we are heading as Catholics and, of course, as Americans.
Jason Poblet, thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
During his Sunday Angelus, Pope Leo brought up the situation in Venezuela, asking the Catholic faithful to pray for its citizens.
Con animo colmo di preoccupazione.
It is with deep concern that I am following the developments in Venezuela. The good of the beloved Venezuelan people must prevail over every other consideration. I pray for all this, and I invite you to pray too, entrusting our prayer to the intercession of Our Lady of Coromoto.
Our Lady of Coromoto is the patroness of Venezuela, home to a large Catholic population. According to a 2020 report from the U.S. State Department, Catholics make up as much as 96% of the population. The country has 42 dioceses served by 74 archbishops, bishops, and auxiliary bishops. The Pope was just one of several world leaders, both religious and secular, that weighed in on the events in Venezuela.
Leaders across Latin America were among the first to respond. Presidents from Colombia, Brazil, and Mexico issued joint statements rejecting the military actions carried out. Maria Corina Machado, the opposition leader who had fled the country for her safety, posted an audio statement on X.
Llegó la hora de la libertad.
The hour of freedom has arrived. We are going to restore order, release the political prisoners, build an exceptional country, and bring our children back home.
Meanwhile, the bishops of Venezuela put out a message on social media which read, "Let us ask God to grant all Venezuelans serenity, wisdom, and strength. We stand in solidarity with those who were wounded and the families of those who died. Let us persevere in prayer for the unity of our people." Meanwhile, the Latin American and Caribbean Episcopal Conference of Bishops said, "We want to reaffirm to you that you are not alone. Salam walks with you and with the Venezuelan people, encouraging every effort to build bridges differences, heal wounds, and move forward in reconciliation without excluding anyone. Across Europe, reactions were more cautious. British and French officials acknowledged the humanitarian implications of the operation, but emphasized the importance of international law and long-term stability in the region. Italy said it joined together with other international partners, having never recognized Maduro's self-proclaimed electoral victory, while condemning the regime's acts of repression. The nation supports the Venezuelan people's aspiration to have a democratic transition. Longtime allies of the Maduro government, Russia and China, sharply criticized the United States, calling the arrests a violation of Venezuelan sovereignty and warned of what Moscow described as dangerous precedent-setting intervention.
The 1973 War Powers Resolution requires presidents to seek approval from Congress for military engagements. According to the Gang of Eight, the top congressional leaders of both main parties, they were not consulted or notified about Saturday's military action. Let's check in with Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales with the latest. Eric.
Good evening, Veronica. Right now, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth and Secretary of State Marco Rubio are giving a briefing to Republican lawmakers on the capture of Nicolas Maduro. While most Republicans are defending President Trump's actions, Democratic leaders are responding with fury, slamming it as an illegal act that needed congressional approval.
This was a military action, and pursuant to the Constitution, only Congress has the power to declare war, to authorize acts that take place in this regard.
Venezuela is not a security threat to the United States. They're not threatening to invade us. There is no terrorist group like Al-Qaeda operating there that has plans to attack the United States. To the extent that you care about the drug trade, yes, they produce drugs, but those drugs go to Europe.
Democrats are demanding information. Many tell me they want to know how the president plans to run a country twice the size of California and continue to provide for its 30 or so million people.
It goes back to what is Trump's goal here? And I think the easiest way to sum up Trump's goal is he wants the oil. He wants U.S. oil companies to have greater control over Venezuelan oil.
Republican Congressman Jim Jordan says he trusts the president and his actions.
When you have a guy who's not recognized as the head of state, who's head of a narco-terrorist criminal operation, who's cozying up to Iran and China, and he's doing it right here in our hemisphere, bringing that individual to justice, I think that's a good thing.
President Trump and others say any pre-notification of the capture would have endangered the mission and military personnel. Republicans Marjorie Taylor Greene and Thomas Massie were critical of President Trump's actions. Greene posted on social media, quote, "This is the same Washington playbook that we are so sick and tired of that doesn't serve the American people, that actually serves big corporations, the banks, and the oil executives." Other Republicans say any new leadership in Venezuela must meet all U.S. demands.
We want them to stop the drug trafficking. We want them to stop the weapons trafficking. We want them to expel the Cubans and the Iranians and the Islamic radicals. And we want them to return to the civilized world and be a good neighbor that contributes to stability, order, and prosperity in our own backyard.
This week, the Senate is expected to vote on a resolution to block President Trump from any further military action against Venezuela without congressional approval. Even if it does pass, it will likely go nowhere. You may recall that the House failed to pass a similar bill last month. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
We have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly, Faith in Action. While SEEK 2026 has come to an end, we'll show you how it inspired thousands of college students nationwide. And a man faces charges after trying to enter Vice President Vance's home. We have the details. Governor Tim Walz is ending his bid for a third term in office. The announcement comes as President Trump spotlights a fraud probe into state child care programs. Federal prosecutors estimate the scandal could top $9 billion in the state. Walz says he can't commit the energy necessary to win another term, even as he claims he could have won. Senator Amy Klobuchar is now considering a run. So far, a dozen Republicans are in the race. A trial is underway in Texas for a former police officer who responded to the Uvalde Uvalde school shooting in 2022. Adrian Gonzalez is facing charges of child abandonment and endangerment. Prosecutors allege he failed to engage, distract, or delay the teenage gunman who opened fire at the Robb Elementary School. Gonzalez denies any wrongdoing. 19 children and two teachers were killed in the shooting. Gonzalez's lawyer says he actively responded to the threat. The trial is taking place in Corpus Christi. The U.S. Secret Service says a man is in custody following an incident at Vice President J.D. Vance's home in Ohio. Law enforcement officials say the man broke a window with a hammer and tried to get inside. The home was empty at the time. Vance and his family had returned to Washington on Sunday. The 26-year-old man from Kentucky is now facing four misdemeanor charges. Secret Service is working with local police and the U.S. Attorney's Office as the investigation continues. Focus is a Catholic organization that places Catholic missionaries on college campuses. Each year, it hosts a large Sikh conference that brings together tens of thousands of students. EWTN News reporter Mark Irons brings us a recap of this faith-filled event.
I've really, really felt the Holy Spirit here.
Every year, at the start of the year, college-age Catholics converge here. It's called Sikh.
It's just so impactful to see all these people that are my age.
Packed with inspirational talks, plenty of opportunities for prayer at Mass and Eucharistic adoration, and the chance to meet tens of thousands of other young people striving to grow in their faith.
I genuinely didn't even know there were like this many young people in America who were so on fire for their Catholic faith.
Organizers said more than 26,000 participants came to the annual multi-day conference, this year spread out across three cities in Denver, Fort Worth, Texas, and here in Columbus, Ohio.
I believe in one God.
On the first day of the year, thousands of college students piled into the Columbus Convention Center. To their surprise, they received a recorded video message from the Pope himself about what to expect at Sikh.
May be your first real encounter with Christ. For others, this weekend will be an opportunity to deepen your relationship with Him, as well as your understanding of the Catholic faith. Be open to what the Lord has in store for you.
The words from Leo XIV, the first American pope, meant to encourage young Catholics, no matter where they are on their faith journey.
This is a very good conference for someone who's just starting out in their faith.
I probably don't always take my faith most years I should. So, you know, when you come here, you see everyone like, you know, you think they're all like super, super like, you know, like holy, but really they're all kind of in the same boat also. So just kind of realizing that, you know, like we're all here to do the same thing. That's to praise the Lord.
Praise, prayer, and mercy visible here. Thousands filled a massive hall for adoration before Christ in the Eucharist late into the night, and long lines formed for students to go to confession to experience the healing power of God's forgiveness. We found places for quiet reflection and fun with friends. And in another part of the convention center, students could explore the bustling space called Mission Way.
In addition to all the opportunities for prayer here at Sikh, participants have a chance to encounter Catholic small businesses, apostolates, ministries, and meet religious brothers and sisters, all out here on this exhibit floor.
Among the crowd, all the different flavors of religious life. Students could encounter those men and women who have committed their lives to Christ in a variety of colorful expressions that have significance and meaning to their mission.
I've seen the black, the brown, the white, but you are in the stylish blue-gray.
Yeah, it's really, I think, a beautiful habit. We wear a habit which is gray for that missionary aspect, and at the same time it's blue for Our Lady, for our devotion to Mary.
One of the main takeaways from Sikh 2026, no matter where you're coming from or where you're going, you're not alone.
It reminds me that even though I'm from a really small town, there's such a huge Catholic community that has a lot of faith.
Mark Irons, EWTN News Night.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, a spiritual revival, how the 2025 Jubilee of Hope transformed the faithful and the city of Rome. Vatican, the Jubilee was described as a year of grace, which allowed pilgrims to return home full of hope. Their experience in the Eternal City also left a long-term investment in Rome. EWTN News Vatican correspondent Valentina Di Donato has more.
The closure of the Holy Door at the Vatican represents the closing of the Jubilee year. These are the words of Archbishop Rino Fisichella, pro-prefect for the Dicastery for Evangelization, who opened today's press conference, marking the end of the Jubilee year that brought over 33 million faithful from 185 countries. And of those 33 million, Americans made up the second most represented nationality.
Yes, we must say that the second largest group in attendance, at least 32%, comes from the United States. This has allowed us to see how registrations for major events, especially with the election of Pope Leo, have sparked great enthusiasm among our American faithful.
The 2025 Jubilee of Hope rejuvenated and transformed not only the faithful pilgrims, but also the very face of Rome itself, creating a new underpass near the Vatican, restoring the famed Trevi Fountain, and updating many of the roads, squares, and churches throughout the city.
It was a message that Pope Francis, too, when we met in the previous preparatory period, gave him. Make Rome more beautiful for the Romans, as well as for the pilgrims. So we have strived to implement projects that are also consistent with the spirit of the Jubilee, with attention to the care of creation, the environment, and encounters between people.
In Rome, Valentina Di Donato for EWTN News Nightly.
We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, YouTube, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Veronica Dudo. Good night and God bless.